Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom, fellow infidels, and welcome to another episode of The Danger Zone right here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gadi Edelman, and Happy New Year to everyone. What is going on in Iran? You know, the only way to look at this is to say we have really got a revolution going on in Iran, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And I am bringing in somebody that is really, as far as experts on Iran go, you don't get much better, if at all better, than this. So I want to read a brief bio of Claire Lopez, who's going to be our guest today. Since 2014, Claire has served as the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's a Senior Fellow at the London Center for Policy Research and a member of the Board of Advisors for the Canadian Mackenzie Institute. In 2016, she was named to Senator Ted Cruz's presidential campaign and national security advisory team. She provides her expertise as an instructor on Iran, Hezbollah, and the Red-Green Axis for Understanding the Threat. Now, for those of you that remember, we had the founder of Understanding the Threat on, John Guandolo, just a few weeks ago. Since 2013, Claire Lopez has served as a member of the Citizens Commission Board on Benghazi. Formerly, she was the vice president of the Intelligence Summit, and she was a career operations officer with the Central Intelligence Agency, yes, the CIA. She was a professor at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies, as well as the executive director of the Iran Policy Committee from 2005 to 2006, and has served as a consultant, intelligence analyst, and researcher for a variety of defense firms. She was named a 2011 Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. To say that Claire has a knowledge on Iran is like saying that the Pope has knowledge on Catholicism. So sit back and get ready for a very, very informative show. We're not going to get any better than this when it comes to finding out what's going on the ground in Iran, as well as where it may go and what the ramifications could mean if we see an overthrow of the current regime in Iran. So once again, Happy New Year. Stick around, and we will be right back right after this.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
We are back. Thank you, everyone, for hanging on through the break. You're listening to The Danger Zone right here on Israel News Talk Radio. My name is Gadi Edelman. I am your host. And with me today, as mentioned in the run-up to this, is Claire Lopez. Claire, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Gadi. I'm very happy to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so glad we got a hold of you. And congratulations. This is our first show of 2018, so you're my special guest.
And I am pleased to be. Thanks for having me.
We have got, I want to jump right in. I read your bio on the little three-minute segment before we came on, and I want to jump right in and talk to you about the elephant in the room. What is going on in Iran right now? What do you hear from your contacts as to what's really happening on the ground in Iran?
Well, what began in the last days of 2017, of December 2017, were a few scattered uprisings in a number of cities, including Mashhad off in the far east of Iran and a few other cities, over economic issues. Rising prices, the tripling of the price of eggs, for example, But that very quickly morphed and changed into protests about the corruption that they saw among officials at every level, the federal, national level, regional, and local, down to their own cities and towns. And then the protests just absolutely took off across the country, and included a lot more issues beyond the economic ones. So what we're seeing today, which is the very end of 2017 coming into the new year here now, is that there are literally dozens of cities across Iran, including Tehran itself, the capital, and all the other big major cities, Mashhad, of course, and Shiraz and many others, where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of demonstrators on the streets, no longer protesting the price of eggs. They're protesting the government itself. They are calling for the downfall, the overthrow of the mullah's regime, the corrupt, the jihadist mullah's regime of the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, the successor to Ayatollah Khomeini, and his goons, his hired thugs, the IRGC, the Quds Force, the Basij, which are the black-suited militia on the streets trying to break up the demonstrations. They want an end to the theocracy. They are calling for democracy, free and fair representation, a free and fair electoral system. This is what they're asking for now. Western-style liberal democracy instead of an Islamic jihadist theocracy.
Now, do you think, now we saw this once before, back in 2009 during the Green Movement, there was an uprising, and as we all know, and I'm going to refresh our listeners' memory for those that don't recall, in my own personal opinion, and you can either agree or disagree, at the time, and I have it in front of me here, it was actually on June 15, 2009, Obama made the following statement, President Obama at that time. Obviously, all of us have been watching the news from Iran, and I want to start off by being very clear that it is up to the Iranians to make decisions about who Iran's leaders will be, and that we respect Iranian sovereignty and want to avoid the United States being the issue inside of Iran, which sometimes the United States can be a handy political football or even discussions with the United States. He went on the next day to say, and this is my personal favorite, on June 16th, he said, it is not productive, given the history of U.S.-Iranian relations, to be seen as meddling. Now, you know, this is a man that for 8 years, that's all he did was meddle. And anyone who lives in Israel knows how he got involved and immersed himself in the Israeli election process. But during that Green Movement, he just turned his back and was silent. Again, my opinion. And do we see the same thing happening now that happened then? And with Trump in the White House, we have a better chance of maybe it's starting to really go somewhere?
It's very different this time around, Gadi. As you note, President Obama had a very different relationship with Iran and the mullahs. We know that before he ever even came into office, he was already sending, in 2008, back-channel emissaries to the Ayatollah Khamenei to open dialogue and to let them know, the mullahs, and their goons in charge of the regime, that his administration would be different, would be open, would be amenable to working with that thuggish jihad regime in Tehran. Nothing could be further from that than the Trump administration we have in office now. Also, I'd go back one more thing about the 2009 uprising. It was led, as you mentioned, by something called a Green Movement with identifiable leadership figures like Mousavi and Karoubi, who today are nowhere to be seen, nor is the Green Movement mentioned at all. This is not about establishment figures, because that's who they were. The Green Movement and its leadership, Mousavi, Karoubi, Rafsanjani, they were members of the revolution in Iran. They were not looking to change the regime, oust the regime, replace the regime. They were the regime. All they were arguing about was who got access to the most loot. And when it came to a financial struggle between them and others in the regime, that's what they were fighting about. That's not this time. That's not what it's about this time. Now we have a movement which is really not organized as we can see it yet in any kind of a party or a real cohesive movement yet. It is spontaneous. It is widespread. It is natural. It is springing up spontaneously across the country. But what you see are very similar complaints among the protesters, and it has nothing to do with the Green Movement. It has to do with a corrupt and an oppressive regime that they see, the protesters in the street see, as not only corrupt and theocratic and oppressive, but also a regime that has taken millions upon millions of dollars from the Obama administration, pallets of cash, we'll recall, and instead of sharing it with the people of Iran, no, of course not. That's not where it was ever meant to go, by Obama or by the regime.
Mm-hmm.
That money went to fund nuclear weapons, intercontinental ballistic missiles, a joint venture WMD program, biological, chemical, and nuclear with North Korea. It went to fund terror, jihad terror groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Taliban, Islamic State across the Middle East, the Houthis in Yemen. The Iranian people know where that money went, and it wasn't to them. That's what they're protesting. They want this time a complete change of government, and that is different, I think, than most of the protesters from 2009 who, will remember, were in the beginning outraged at a fraudulent election, the re-election at that time,
right,
of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. This time, that's not what it's about. It's about a complete overhaul. They want the mullah's regime gone, and they want in its place a representative, democratic, free, fair electoral system with a constitution that protects the rights of all citizens equally.
Do you think, given the fact that what we saw in 2009, as you just said, was a movement that had leaders and people that were involved politically, and this time, I'll use the term grassroots, it's more from the ground up, people in the street. Do you think it's going to go anywhere, given that they don't have that leadership? I mean, there isn't one party or one person saying, you know, let's do this. Can it actually go somewhere with just all these people screaming, we want change?
Yeah, I think it can, but there are a couple of important elements here. One, I would say another difference from 2009, of course, you know, we're 7 years on from there now, sorry, 8 years on really from there now, is the advance in social media. And these Iranian kids, and it is a lot of young people on the streets, they know how to get around the jamming and the blocking, measures that the Iranian security services tried to put in place,
right,
to block their protests from going out over social media. So social media has really exploded in these last 8 years. That's a big difference, and they know how to get through to it. The other thing is it's very important to watch what the security services do. As I mentioned before, the Basij, which are these black-clad thugs on the street. They're an element. They're a division of the IRGC, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, but also other police in different cities. Watch what they do. So far, they have not cracked down as hard as one might have thought they would have by now. Additionally, just today, and this is notable, President Hassan Rouhani of Iran issued a statement saying that the protesters have a right to be in the streets and to protest.
Right.
He gave them sanction, in a way, to protest. That's rather different than Ahmadinejad back in 2009. So watch these things. Watch how the security services react. If they continue to hold back from really cracking down, then what we might be seeing is a reluctance among those security services, again, another generation, 8 years on, of people who may share some of the sentiments and the frustrations and the outrage of the demonstrators in the street. If that's the case, then that's the end of the regime. That's not what we see yet. We don't know yet. There's an awful lot yet to happen. But watch the security services.
Let me cut you off real quick. We're going to take our first break, and we'll be right back after this.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
We are back. Thank you, everyone, for hanging on through the break. You're listening to The Danger Zone right here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gadi Edelman, and we are talking to Claire Lopez. Claire, thank you again. I you know, when we left, we were talking about the possibility of where this might actually go, and you brought up one of the things that was stated today, that they have a, quote, right to protest. I'm also reading... And the problem is we don't know what's really coming out from the people versus what's coming out from the government. And I've read so many different things this morning, especially on the news and Twitter. This article says Iran warns protesters that they will, and I quote, pay the price for mass demonstrations. The other thing, on the other hand, that I read was someone was saying that the Iranian government has said that women can remove their hijabs if they want. And I don't buy into that at all. I think that's just propaganda. Any idea on what really is or is not happening on the ground as far as, I mean, we know that people, protesters have been beaten. We know that some have been killed, unfortunately. Did you hear about this warning that they're going to, quote, pay the price?
Yes, there are different statements coming out from different figures in the Iranian leadership. So as I said before, it was President Hassan Rouhani who made the statement earlier today about how it was permissible for protesters to be on the street and to protest. Now, he didn't sanction violence, but he said the protesters have a right to protest. The President Rouhani said that. Now, other figures in the leadership, the foreign minister, for example, and other leadership figures have issued statements that are more hardline, as you mentioned, indicating that a crackdown, a hard crackdown against the protesters may yet be coming. The statement about the hijabs, that apparently is an official statement that the police will no longer arrest, accost and arrest women, girls on the street who are in violation of the Iranian dress code.
Wow.
And that includes the hijab, among other things, like a long coat and so forth, long sleeves and on. So that appears to be an official statement. Now, whether that message gets down to all the cities and villages in Iran, you know, that's another story, but it appears to be an official statement. Yes.
No, I had seen the actual official statement, so I want to clarify, and I agree with you. I do know that they made that statement. My observation when I first saw it was they're just saying that for the world as a propaganda statement, saying, look, we're being so nice and we're reforming and we're saying if they don't want to wear the hijab, they don't have to, when in reality something different may very well be going on the streets. So that was my first take when I saw that, because I can't believe that the regime that's in power right now in Iran would be willing. To many, that may be a little thing, but that is huge, because you give them that little bit of, okay, the women don't have to adhere to a certain dress code. The next thing you know, these demonstrations get bigger and they grow and more people pile on and they start to do other things that are against the so-called rules and laws on the ground. So I
right.
find it hard to believe, but.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, what you're pointing out there is that there is this fine line when a regime like Iran's find itself under assault from its own people, an uprising from its own people. There's a fine line to be trod, and that is, how much do you give in concessions to the protesters to see if that will mollify them, and how much do you hold back and hold a hard line? Because, as you said, if you give a bit, they're going to want mm-hmm. more. So what they're doing right now is trying to tread a very fine line. It may be, of course, they know more than we do. They, the regime leadership, perhaps knows more than we do about what is going on inside the country, how widespread, how serious they're actually taking this uprising. We're getting what we could get, again, out of, you know, social media and online and from people who are getting news out of the country. But they may have a better view of it. One would expect they'd have a better view of it from inside the country. And they may be, in fact, more alarmed than we realize. Let's hope so.
Do you think, and I don't even know if you can answer this, Claire, so I'm just going to throw out the question. You give me your opinion, because I value your opinion. Do you think, and you went in the beginning in that first segment about how this started and what it's grown into, do you think we would be seeing this today if we had someone like Hillary Clinton in office versus Trump? Or do you think some of this might be because the people there know they have an administration that will side with them?
I do think it's the latter, absolutely. And I don't think that it is Americans or any element of American government or intelligence community that had anything to do with this. As a matter of fact, I think they all got caught flat-footed. Mm-hmm. They're just not up to keeping up with any of this. It, I mean, the intelligence community just needs, well, so much work, and Mike Pompeo is just the guy to do it at CIA, although the National Security Council is another story. Yes. and needs a complete overhaul. They were caught flat-footed. So I'm saying U.S. government probably did not realize this was coming. However, I do not discount the possibility that other forces in the region who have been in contact with and supportive of and mutually discussing with the Trump administration, like the Saudis, for example, or perhaps other Gulf states, could have had a role in this. I think that's very possible.
Yeah, and I saw someone on Twitter today. I don't recall who it was, and I'm sure it's someone you know, but it's someone who has connections with sources within the CIA who actually stated, we had no idea this was coming. So that you're absolutely right that, you know, our intel community probably did get caught blindsided by this.
Yeah, I think that was our good friend Jack Posobiec tweeting this morning.
It may have been. I've been reading so much that my eyes are going to bleed, because Twitter has been, and you and I were talking about this off the air, Twitter has been one of those avenues where people in Iran, especially those that have either gotten word to those on the outside or have figured out a way to get around being blocked on the internet, a lot of news is coming out via Twitter, which, I mean, social media, you nailed it. It is huge when it comes to what's happening there. There are so many avenues, and the reason I'm so excited about this, and I want to explain to our listeners, because depending on the age of our listener, they may not be aware of the fact that one time, one of the greatest allies that Israel had in the Middle East was Iran. Now, of course, we're going back pre-1979, but when I look at Iran today and where it used to be with Israel, and the ramifications, if this revolution or regime change were to happen, I mean, we could say goodbye to the funding of Hezbollah. We could say goodbye to the funding of Hamas. We could say, first of all, Israel, as you well know, Benjamin Netanyahu is constantly talking about the biggest threat to Israel is Iran. This could change so much for the better on the ground in Israel. It's like getting me excited. Happy New Year. This may actually happen.
Well, possibly, but hold your horses a bit, because let's look back. And indeed, we've heard some of the protesters in Iran chanting in support of Reza Shah. Reza Shah was the father of Mohammad Reza Shah, the Shah who was overthrown in 1979. Mm-hmm. So there were two Shahs of the Pahlavi dynasty in the 20th century. But let's remember, the 20th century for Persia, because that's what it used to be called, was an absolute aberration on the history of Persia, going back at least to the beginning of the 16th century, 1500. From that point forward to the 20th century, Persia was a jihad state. It was every bit a devout, practicing, dedicated Islamic jihad state. And prior to the 1500s, to the 16th century, Persia had been conquered first in the very first years of Islam in the 7th century by Sunni armies, and forcibly converted away from Zoroastrianism, their ancient monotheistic faith, to Sunni Islam. That prevailed until Turkic invaders around 1500 invaded and forcibly converted them all again, this time to Shiite Islam, right. But jihadi all the way. So I'm urging a note of caution. I'm hopeful that those days are behind for Iran. But we can also look to surveys, take them for what they're worth in a totalitarian system, of course. But that, as our good friend Andy Bostom points out, only a few years ago showed overwhelming support, Pew Research Institute, for example, support for Islamic law, for rule of Sharia. Now, whether you take that with a grain of salt or perhaps the whole box, I'm not sure. But let's see what comes out of this, because again, the slogans they're chanting are about democracy, freedom, individual liberty, a representative system, and a constitution with legal protections and equality for all. So let's hope that that's where Iran is headed. It's so important that they get support from the yes. outside. And I cannot overestimate, I can't say how, you know, I cannot emphasize strongly enough how important it is that our president, Donald Trump, is expressing his support for them. Even that doesn't mean the 101st Airborne is dropping in tomorrow or anything like that. But what it means is they can take heart, they can take encouragement that there is someone who supports them and backs them and is willing to stand up and say so in the White House today.
That's perfect, because that's right where we're going to cut it for the next break. And we will be right back after this.
I'm John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind,
every Thursday.
We are back. Thank you, everyone, for hanging on through that last short break. You're listening to The Danger Zone with Gadi Edelman, and with me today is Claire Lopez. And I was saying to you off air there real quickly that it has been 38 years since the revolution. So you've got people that are in their 20s and 30s that literally were born and grew up under this regime, and that's all they know. So if we do see a change of attitude, you know, it could take years. But you then said to me that you don't think that the people on the ground there really, you know, like they could care less about Israel. They don't necessarily hate Israel, but their main concern right now is Iran and their own situation.
I think that's the case. Yes, you still see the crowds mechanically chanting Marbar, Embrica, Marbar, Israel. You know, there's not a whole lot of enthusiasm there among the younger set. And remember, this younger set, enormously internet savvy. They are connected. They have been on Instagram, on Twitter, on Telegram, on all the other social media. They know how to get around the censors and the jammers. They are just, you know, wanting what they see on the outside world. They want to wear their blue jeans. They want to wear their hair however they want to wear their hair. They want equal access to education, to jobs. They want an economy that works. They want employment. They want the same things that everybody else wants. Now, how much they have been indoctrinated with jihad and Sharia, which has been absolutely crammed down their throats for the entire duration of these last 39 years or so, how much they actually absorbed of that is the question. And I don't think we really have a good answer for that. They've been bombarded with Islamic law and, you know, dedication and devotion to Islam. And the hardcore believers of the regime leadership who are now, let's face it, they are in their 50s, 60s, 70s and on up, may not be the same degree of dedication and devotion as the younger generation. We don't really know. But looking at those on the street, that's not what they're chanting about. They're not asking for more Sharia, please.
Right.
They are asking for democracy.
If it's played right, and when I say played right, by those on the outside, by the Trump administration, as well as other countries, do you think we could see a change where we would see an end to the terror funding and Iran pretty much being, you know, getting its foothold? I mean, right now we could run through the countries. You've got Iraq, you've got Syria, you've got Lebanon, you've got Yemen, you've got Libya. I mean, they are everywhere when it comes to having their foot and their Revolutionary Guard and their people in place. Do you think we could see a change to that?
It would take a real and a serious change and a real revolution. And let's not kid ourselves. This regime in Iran has no place to go. I mean, you know, figuratively, yeah, no place
right.
to go. They can get on their airplanes and fly off to wherever. And exile would be, you know, their option there. Sure. But it is fight or die for them. There is so much opposition to the way they've treated their own people, the human rights abuses, that the visual hanging people,
yes,
you know, in town plazas, the torture inside the prisons. They've had enough of that. And the anger that has built up about that over these 39 years is real, and it's palpable on the streets. Now, I want to mention one opposition group that really is, one Iranian opposition group that really is very well organized, large, dedicated, and that is the National Council of Resistance of Iran, or NCRI, whose offices, by the way, are literally two blocks from the White House in downtown Washington, D.C. on Pennsylvania Avenue. This group is the oldest and the best organized of all the Iranian opposition groups. It has a presence inside Iran and outside, and it is dedicated to all the principles of Western liberal democratic style government that one could ever wish for. They are led by a woman. Her name is Mariam Rajavi, whose headquarters is in Paris. But remember, too, these are the people who got out to us in 2002, the very first information the West openly, publicly ever had about Iran's clandestine nuclear weapons program. Not the overt one that, you know, this fake nuclear mm-hmm. deal dealt with, but the actual program, the clandestine one that continues without skipping a beat. They're the group that brought that information out. They have a huge network inside of Iran. A very large diaspora population of support outside. That's a group that could help to bring to Iran, to the people of Iran, some of the changes that would be necessary. But let's not forget it's going to be, if it's to be a revolution, it is going to be very hard fought. And I mean fought. And it will be a hard, hard revolution. If it's to come. There's much more that they will need to do.
Do you think Trump needs to do more than what he's been doing as far as just tweeting? I don't believe he's come out, unless I'm mistaken, and made any video public statements on Iran saying, you know, we back you. You know, he's been kind of throwing that out there on Twitter. But is there more you think that our administration can do to keep this ball rolling or get it rolling more?
Well, this being a holiday weekend, of course, the New Year's weekend, we know that our president is at his Mar-a-Lago home. Twitter seems to have been his, you know, main avenue for getting his statements out up till now. But I do think that there's probably a lot more going on behind the scenes than we have any idea of. I can be sure that there is a lot happening that we don't know about and may not know about. But I would expect that there would be a more public statement from the president, perhaps on the New Year Day, perhaps the day after, as we get back into the work week. Let's see. But I would really expect some kind of a White House public statement from President Trump. I certainly hope so. In support of the Iranian people and their quest for liberty.
No, I do too. And I want to kind of take you back a bit. You brought up the nuclear arms avenue of Iran previously. And the last time I actually interviewed you on my other radio station, we had talked about Iran's nuclear quest. And on my show, you believed at that time that Iran probably already did have a nuclear weapon. Do you still think that, or has that changed?
Oh, absolutely. No, certainly. What that's based on is, first of all, reporting from the IAEA itself. That's the International Atomic Energy Agency. And for geeks who read this stuff like I do, the IAEA puts out quarterly reports about Iran. And although it's not been very forthcoming in recent years, take it back to November 2011, and that quarterly report outlined in a great deal of very specific details what Iran was working on in terms of nuclear warhead R&D, nuclear warhead explosive charges R&D, nuclear warhead metallic hemispheric R&D to put together the actual bomb itself.
Right. I want to explain to our listeners, R&D means research and development. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yes. So all of this is laid out in the November 2011. Okay, that's six and a half or something years
right.
ago. There is no reason to think that Iran has gone anywhere but forward since that point in time when they outlined how far it had already gotten and was already working on nuclear warheads at that time. Since then, what have we gotten? We've gotten this misbegotten nuclear deal called the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, concluded in July 2015, which does nothing except legitimizes an overt path to a nuclear
exactly.
bomb capability for Iran, while at the same time allowing all of Iran's nuclear weapons infrastructure to remain intact and allowing all of its sites that it so chooses to call off limits to be off limits to inspections. Well, duh, if you had a clandestine, illicit nuclear weapons program, where would you put it? in the sites that have already been open to journalists, scientists, cameras in the world? Or would you put it on hidden military sites buried literally under mountains and in bunkers and tunnels? So, again, back to the NCRI. The National Council of Resistance of Iran, they too have been marvelous sources, incredible sources of ongoing information since 2002 until now, reporting on all kinds of sites that their network inside of Iran. I mean, what a brave, courageous set of people those must be. And they do get caught every now and then, but the network keeps alive all these years, but they keep channeling out information about secret sites, what's going on in the secret sites. So yes, absolutely, I'm convinced that Iran has not just a clandestine nuclear weapons program, oh, by the way, also a biological and chemical weapons program to go along with the missile delivery system program, but that clandestine program continues apace, regardless of the JCPOA.
Now, real quick, before I let you go, where can people find you and things that you write and over at the Center for Security
sure.
Policy?
I don't have a blog, but I do publish regularly at the Center for Security Policy. That's centerforsecuritypolicy.org, a shorter website, but goes to the same place, securefreedom.org. I do tweet under my name, Claire M. Lopez, online. I also have a Facebook account, also my name, Claire Lopez, Claire M. Lopez. And you'll find those online as well.
Let us hope and pray that this is a really wonderful new year for not just the United States going forward and for Israel, but for Iran as well. I would love to see Iran really get rid of a regime that has just caused so many problems is an understatement throughout the Middle East and other parts of the world. It would be really wonderful to see that happen this year.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Scotty, so much for devoting your program to this. And our thoughts and hopes are with the Iranian people today.
Thank you, Claire.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.